Ahoy there!
Oh, ahoy! Ahoy. Oh, I was looking in quite the other direction. I didn't see you appear.
Well, yes, it's this new electric motor that I've got on my on my little dirigible here.
Electric but devilish silent.
I know, and I sort of glide in at an unexpected height and just plop down on the water.
Down you plop like a little uncontrolled drone. Like a remote controlled drone. Someone in Nevada's probably pulling the buttons and the levers and the knobs.
Martin, what are you helming? What are you helming there?
What am I helming? Oh, well, I've actually come in on a sort of space hopper, as you can see.
Oh, which, well, that's interesting.
Well, it is interesting in that it actually requires a good deal more effort than just walking.
That's always been the case.
It's not a mode of transport I'd recommend, actually, because you're not really, there's not much forward propulsion, or if there is, quite more often than not, it tips you forwards, and you know, you end up.
It tips you forward. Yes. It's not ergonomic, is it? So you're either bouncing up and down and going nowhere, or you're trying to go forwards and getting the thing tangled, forever tangled in your limbs.
Forever.
That's what I find.
Do you know, and it's chafed something terrible around the tops of my thighs. My inner thighs are now chafed by the curious ribbed proboscis.
Yes, that's right. The two ribbed proboscises. Yes. Are they horns? Are they sort of horns of some kind?
I suppose they are, yes. Well, yes. Horns of a dilemma in terms of how I'm going to get back. I mean, admittedly, it's all imaginary, but still.
Mm. But still, chafing nonetheless. How's Dunnell? How are things at the gaff?
It's been all right. It's been an interesting a couple of weeks around the Easter period. It's always a happy time around Dunnell and down in the village. Last year I decided in the middle of the village we have a rather attractive Georgian, I suppose it's a sort of seat, a kind of commemorative seat with an arch. Very, very pretty Georgian sort of honey-coloured stone with a couple of fluted pillars. They were put up by an ancestor of mine in the village. And, you know, the Bain Joneses, as you may know, they were involved in trade. You know, they were involved in trade. Tea and sugar and rum and cotton,
Martin.
Cotton and all of these sorts. As you know.
Oh, Martin.
No.
I can see where this is going.
We were involved
in
trade, you know, with across the Atlantic, you know, in Liverpool and Bristol. And, yes, we've been very much involved in trade. At the top of this arch, it's a very attractive thing. It's got our family crest, Dominion. That's the motto, Dominion. And the family crest.
Like the bingo hall.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly like that. And the family crest is a whip. It's just a... And there's a very attractive sort of bas-relief of, I suppose it's some forebear of mine, being carried by four smiling boys in a chair. And I felt it was possibly time last year. I thought it was time for us maybe to perhaps to address this. Perhaps it was time for us to maybe come up with a new look for it, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And so we threw it open to tender. It was very exciting. I was very, very keen that we should be more forward looking.
Of course. Yeah. And just cover it up. Just basically pretend it never happened. That's that sort of thing. Yeah,
yes, very much so. But also maybe, you know, throw it open to competition. Anyway, I had been in discussion with a lovely local artist, and she's come up with I thought was an absolutely winning design for the new arch we were going to put up. The Unity Arch, we were going to call it. But of course, what I'd forgotten was that I'd said it was going to go open to tender. And some designer from Morocco has come in and has been awarded the gig.
What's he come up with, Martin? What's the...
She.
What's the...
She has come up with something.
She?
Yes.
What has she come up with?
I think it's very heartfelt and very abstract and very elemental, I suppose. But it's... I'm going to be honest. I don't think it's very sophisticated, you know. And I think what we'd come up with our local artist was rather better. Anyway, there we go. It, you know, that's
Martin. No. What is it? Is it you sort of? Is it you in the stocks or something? What's she?
No.
What's she come up with? What's the motif? What's the gist?
I don't think there's a gist. I'm not sure she's grinding any particular axe. It's just, I don't, you know, I just feel it's not in the vernacular. You know, it's not in the vernacular at all, you know. But,
well, it's a bit too, well, Moroccan?
It's a bit too Moroccan. Yes, it's right. A little bit sort of,
yeah,
Saharan. Yes, you know what I mean? I mean, sorry, I know that's not in the spirit of the thing, but I'm smarting slightly. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, well, I can see how that's extremely frustrating. You want to sort of, you know, you're wanting in good faith to paper over a few cracks in the family history, and the last thing you want is a great crack of a monument.
Well, that's exactly, just, exactly. But, you know, having submitted something that was very, very beautiful and beautifully crafted and very, very, very fitting in the local vernacular, and we'd gone to great, great trouble, and then someone's come up with something that's really very, very straightforward, and really, I think, probably took them all of 7, maybe 8 minutes to draw. And that... possibly by virtue of being something so simple and not complicated and well thought through at all, but by virtue of being something that's shot from the hip, as it were, has been given precedence. And I think that's ultimately very good. It's very good. It's good. It's good that that is how it should be, because I think sometimes things being overworked, overthought through, far too filigreed and, you know, to the nth degree, calculated and very, very, very beautifully wrought, in itself is quite wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong that you should have something that's really very, very basic.
I've got it. It's a gesture of some sort,
yes,
isn't it?
It's a gesture. Yes. Yeah. And I think that's right. I think we should stop allocating these things to. I'm smarting.
Martin,
I'm
just
smarting.
A wild
I'm
guess.
Smarting. Yes.
A wild guess. Yes. Does the gesture involve a fist, and is there a finger poking up from the fist? Is that what?
Yes.
Yes, I thought so. Yeah, I thought, yeah.
Yes. I mean,
so,
you know,
so the idea would be, so the idea would be that you would sit on that. Is that the idea?
I'm not sure, yeah. But you know, it is.
That's the implication, though, isn't it? It used to be a seat, right? It used to be a seat, and now it's a sort of protest fist with a single finger poking up. The implication seems to be.
Yes.
At least the creative artistic implication seems to be sit and swivel, Mr. Bain-Jones. Is that fair?
I think there's an element of that involved, certainly. And I'm,
well,
you know, it's. I'm very pleased.
But it's out of your hands. You can't do anything about it, can you? All you can be is pleased.
I can only be pleased, and I am pleased. I think it's marvellous. I think it's very good.
Let me pick you up with a bit of good news.
Craig.
I am making a mint on my Instagram. I really am. Things have really turned around, Martin. I've just absolutely cracked it.
Haven't got that many followers.
I think the last count it was 104. But what's happened is I've just got this brilliant, brilliant thing that I'm doing on there.
Yes.
I'm basically, you know, I was just flogging shit for money by prostituting myself on Instagram.
Yes.
You know, that's what I was doing. That was basically my scheme.
Yes.
Well, my new scheme
Different.
This is brilliant. Wait till you hear this. Yes. This is my new scheme. Yes. So what I do is I'm still flogging shit,
yes,
right? But what I'm doing is I'm flogging undersized shit for oversized prices. Now, that sounds a bit cryptic. I'll explain
really
to you what I'm doing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Go on then. Put some flesh on the flesh.
Basically, let me grow a sort of, you know, a beer stomach on that already corpulent frame. What I'm doing is I've got this range of greetings cards. If you buy, and they look really good value, you know, they look really, really great value.
Yes.
But when they arrive, They're fucking tiny. Really tiny. So I've got beautiful designs. You say, I say, pack of 12 greeting cards for £3.99.
Wow,
and you
that's
think,
amazing.
Oh my God, that's amazing. When they arrive, they are elfin. They are tiny. And it's brilliant. What I've realised is the internet is perfect for selling tiny shit.
Do you know what?
Pretending that it's the right size.
You've been beaten. I unless you've been doing this for a while, for my nephew's Christmas last year, I bought him a great big poster all about malt whiskey. Big malt whiskey poster. Oh, and it was wonderful.
Yes,
oh,
gorgeous.
There was this enormous great big poster all about malt whiskey. I mean, it looked like literally something you could paste up beside a motorway. Oh,
yeah.
It was
glorious.
Yes, it literally was the size of a postcard when it arrived. Literally, it arrived in a tube, and I was thinking, what is this? Cigars by post? I didn't order a cigar. What could this possibly be? I went into it and I pulled out this tiny. It was like the scroll of an elfin Lord Mayor. You know, or an elfin town crier. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, hang on. Where are my glasses? Where are my glasses? I can't read it. It's quite small.
Where are my fairy glasses?
Oh, there. Oh, even these.
Oh,
are,
my goodness.
Oh, goodness. Well, what a good idea.
Well, you know, that's the key. That's the key. It's what you sell it as. I bet that was sold as a poster,
yes.
Right? Because you wouldn't imagine that a poster would be the size of a postcard. So I'm flogging a dinner service at the moment. I'm flogging dinner plates because no one thinks that they might actually be the size of to fit in a doll's house. So they order a dinner plate and they think, my God, £4 a plate. That's extraordinary.
Yes.
When it arrives.
Yes.
They're
exquisite.
When it arrives,
they're very, very small. And what recourse do they have in their fury?
None whatsoever. It's brilliant. None whatsoever. It's the best scam. It's probably, like you say, it's been running a while. But it's a scam that gives me so much joy because I can't be prosecuted for what I'm doing.
No.
I can't be prosecuted for it at all because at the end of the, you know, who's going to argue about what size a dinner plate should be? There is no statute that says a dinner plate should be a certain size. You just sort of assume they'd be the same size as other dinner plates, posters and greeting cards that you have seen in your life. But no, there's no recourse. And I'm just coining it, Martin.
Wow.
I am literally sawing it off like a log.
Good. And how many followers have you got now? 104, did you say?
104, yes, 104 disgruntled, embittered, deeply technophobic because they're unable to unfollow me. Followers, yes, great, it's just wonderful.
But that's marvellous.
Martin,
yes,
we can't really begin the show without passing comment on that beautiful funeral we had had this week. Prince Philip's funeral.
Yes.
Really quite exceptional, wasn't it?
I mean,
yes, yeah. And wasn't it very moving when the Land Rover, you know, how brilliantly British to be married to the Queen, to be Prince Philip and arrive at your own funeral on the back of a Land Rover. Just
a
beautifully,
Land Rover.
Beautifully. It's taken understatement to the level of art form, I think.
Interestingly, I felt the essence of understatement that was perforce part of the funeral service. Everything had to be pared down, numbers in all instances brought down to the bare minimum, actually made the focus of the whole a good deal sharper. I thought just four individuals providing the choral music, I thought was beautifully, beautifully done.
And of course, this is. I mean, imagine. Can you just contemplate for a moment the number of services that the Duke of Edinburgh was present at, the number of occasions, the number of state occasions, the number of every kind of service that you can possibly imagine. So this was the church service attendees' church service. This was the service to begin and end or church services. Virtually no readings whatsoever. Never having to listen to anyone make a eulogy. And just beautiful music.
Yes.
You're very knowledgeable about choral singing. To me, those, I just thought they were exceptional. Those four, the four members of the choir. Tell me a little bit about what they achieved. And one of the things they sang was composed specially for the occasion. Is that right?
Well, it wasn't composed specially for the occasion. They've both been composed, I think, for Prince Philip. The Benjamin Britten Jubilate,
right,
is a wonderful setting. That's a very, very. I think it was written, I think, in the 60s. I think, but it's been sung at various services. It's now very much part of the choral repertoire. The other was a setting of Psalm 104 by William Loveday, which I think was a very, very lovely. And the solos, it altered between the soprano solo and the tenor, and I thought they were both exceptional. I really do think they sang beautifully. I thought the clever decision that James Vivian, who's the director of music there at St. George's, made was, obviously, normally they have choristers. They'll have a sort of a cadre of some 20 or so choristers. But not being able to have choristers, I think he made the very sensible decision, rather than just having one chorister who perhaps wouldn't carry it, he got this amazing soprano who had this very, very strong but crystal clear voice. And she, I think, carried it beautifully. I thought the whole thing was just beautifully done. You did actually mention something that's just got me thinking, though. In this time of COVID, how very, very nice and touching. Because normally, people always say that, you know, when the Queen goes everywhere, people have just painted, so she must think everywhere smells of fresh paint. Similarly, the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh must think that every church is rammed, absolutely rammed to the gunnels. You know, the vestry door practically coming off its hinges. But actually, in this final service of the Duke of Edinburgh's, suddenly, St. George's, Windsor, appeared slightly more crowded than most parish churches do of a Sunday morning, you know. And I thought that was a gesture of great solidarity, isn't it?
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful gesture. And the other thing I really, really enjoyed was the downbeat nature of the Dean of Windsor, who read with a sort of, he sort of had a look of sullen surprise, as if he'd never read an ecclesiastical text in his life, and was just, it was as if someone had kidnapped the real Dean of Windsor.
That's
seconds
right.
before the funeral, and he and some sort of interloper had just had to kind of bluff his way through his ceremony. So he was constantly reading everything that he read with a kind of MO of, where the hell is this going? You know.
So, yes, by the end of the service, I'd sort of made friends with his voice and his delivery. But
I loved it. I loved his delivery.
In many ways,
I loved it. I loved its non-theatricality.
Yes, well, that's true. Richard Charters, the last Bishop of London, who had a wonderful, deep and resonant voice and would make wonderful use of it when he spoke. And it was always lovely to hear him speak, because he had a sort of a sonorous authority about him that was at once rather Old Testament, but then had the rather softer, forgiving side of the New Testament as well. It is wonderful to hear when he used to preach. He was always rather good. The Dean of Windsor, slightly softer voiced. And then Justin Welby, who I think has a voice not unlike the sound of a wasp in a bottle. He reminds me. Who is it he reminds me of? I'm not sure, because when he talks, he's got a way of talking a bit like that. But I thought it was a wonderful, very moving. And meteorologically, I don't think we could have done better. But when I should be doing the blooming announcements for this.
You'd have been brilliant. You'd have been absolutely brilliant.
A long time ago, all these sorts of events, as far as I can remember, were commented on by, it's the same people who used to do the racing, I think. You'll have these people be talking through the thing, the mass bands of blues and rolls, and how they're leading their mascot goat Down the Mall. And do you remember those?
I do.
Everything we watched on telly
they were steeped in it as well. And there was no sense in which they were recalling facts or it was just something that they
knew.
It was in the very weft and weave of their presumably
they
linen
knew that.
Suits. Yes, yes.
Yes, absolutely right. They knew every last detail of every last regimental colour.
Yes, whereas it was slightly it felt slightly improvised, didn't it? The commentary on Prince Philip's funeral. You suspect that, you know, they would kind of wheel in people, wouldn't they, sort of now and then, to sort of explain.
Well, you might have hoped they would. You might have hoped. There was a character called Brian Fleming, maybe he was called, who used to do all those things and who clearly had been in the army, knew every last detail. You get the sense now that it's being commented on by someone who's got about 7 volumes of Debrett's and he's literally leafing through all the going, shit, shit, shit. They've gone. Bugger.
Yeah.
I suspect that's how it goes.
There's one of the Buckingham Palace ones. I know that. I've seen those at Buckingham. Oh, he's gone again. He's gone again. Oh, no.
He's gone.
Beef eaters.
Oh, it's
beef
queen.
He's
queen.
A beef eater. He's a beef. Oh, no. The idea of commemoration, Martin, commemoration.
So
it's the commemoration of an extraordinary event. And there's been another commemoration, hasn't there?
Yes. Oh, please can I guess if you're talking about the thing I'm hoping you are. Is it faintly Easter related in a way?
Yes, it is. It is Easter
is it
related.
Ovoid?
Yes, it's Ovoid. Yes.
It's Ovoid. Oh,
this is the most extraordinary. Most extraordinary. This is the best counterpoint we could possibly wish for to place at the other side of the scales to Prince Philip's funeral. I mean, man who lived his life, lived his life to his 99th birthday in service, incredible consort to the Queen, duty and honour before anything else. A man who was sort of Gatsby-like in his absence from his own funeral. So we move from that to the commemoration of the
10th
anniversary of Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
And,
there we are.
And Martin, so there's been to commemorate this, I just can't, I honestly thought this was perhaps an April Fool and then had to check the date. Fabergé and Game of Thrones have collaborated on a Fabergé egg to celebrate.
Yes. Yes.
To celebrate the world's most iconic Tits and Dragons show.
The Tits and Dragons on that show were phenomenal.
Absolutely.
World class. Dragons.
Yeah, I've never seen Tits and Dragons the like.
T&D on that kind of level. My goodness, as T&D goes, it was something else. But you're right, 10 years since it came out, and I do think I adored Game of Thrones. But then, of course, I was very fortunate in that I never watched the last episode, the last series.
I did. There's a lot. I actually really enjoyed the last series. I know it's not, everyone says, oh, the second to last series was the one that sort of really, really. I enjoyed it. I watched it to the end and thoroughly enjoyed it.
It was wonderful.
Couldn't really understand why everyone was so cross about the end of Game of Thrones.
I think they were large. People are very bad at knowing what it is they're cross about, I think. You know, people are largely cross, probably because the series has ended. That's really it. They're cross because there's no more Game of Thrones.
I suppose if there was a betrayal, the thing about Game of Thrones was the good people never win. It's amoral as a show, essentially. And I think if you were to have a problem with it, it would be that it had an ending and the good people came out on
top. So the good people did win.
They did, yeah. I mean,
well,
or at least they had like an up ending.
Yes.
Whereas Game of Thrones is sort of the thing that we all loved about it was it would just always pull the rug out from us at the end of at any opportunity.
Yes.
And the most unjust people would be punished without remorse. No matter how good and noble they were, they would suffer the most humiliating
deaths. And it was always, you knew the unities would be satisfied only when good prevailed. And the nice Jon Snow.
Jon Snow. Yeah.
And his
got it in one.
His lot would prevail. That was basically it. And there was a moment where we thought Jon Snow was going to be dead. Then he wasn't. Then he wasn't. He wasn't dead.
He did. He did die.
But then he came back to life, brought back by the lady with the red hair. And yes.
Anyway, I'm not sure how you get from that to a Fabergé egg.
No.
That's my point. I mean, I don't really understand. First of all, I don't understand the economics. This Fabergé egg retails, I believe, for $2.2 million.
Oh, really?
Now,
how many are they making?
Well, this is the thing. I don't know. I mean, is there a production line at the moment? Are they literally sort of, you know, falling off into a cardboard box at the end of some kind of...
Are they bespoke?
You know, at the end of some kind of conveyor belt. I mean, does somebody order one and everyone at Fabergé laughs for a week and then starts half-heartedly making one?
Yes.
I mean, what... How does it all work?
Is Fabergé based in Russia? That's the other question.
I'm sure Fabergé was... I'm sure it was a French house, but then a French fashion house or...
Egg house.
Is Fabergé a jeweller or what are they? I mean, what do you call them?
I think they're jewellers. I mean, I'm not sure. I didn't once upon a time own some antiperspirant that was made by Fabergé. Didn't they make something like that?
I think you're right.
Sure, I'm sure. I think Blue Stratos or something like that used to be chunked out by Fabergé. I'm not sure. Anyway, the link between Blue Stratos and Fabergé eggs is certainly no less circuitous than the link between Fabergé eggs and Game of Thrones. But
well, I suppose you've got dragons, haven't you?
Well,
you've got dragons.
And tits as
dragons
well.
Dragons lay eggs.
Dragons lay eggs, you're right. There you are.
Is that right? Is that what it is? It's a dragon egg? Is that it?
I've got it, I think, maybe. Anyway, I won't be buying one, I don't think.
No, I won't be either. I think they are Russian-based.
I think they're Russian. I think they're based in Russia, in which case I trust them even less. Am I allowed to say that? Of course, we're meant to be lovely to everybody, but the Russians, I find it very hard these days to be nice about the Russians.
Well, I love the Russians. It's the
oh no no the
it's
Russian
the
authorities
members of the KGB.
Yes.
I think
plenty of lovely Russians.
I think it's slightly questionable.
Yes, but
I mean, this is we can't even get into it. We could probably get whacked, Martin.
Yes.
We start talking about Salisbury and this armaments. This dreadful business in the Czech Republic.
Oh,
this
armaments. Czech Republic. What's going on there?
Well, there was an armaments. We can't talk about this.
Well,
but
there was
an armaments. Then an armaments facility that's
just been
killed, blown up. Yeah, I mean they blew up this armaments facility, but it's the same two guys that brought the Novichok to Salisbury. I mean, it's quite incredible. I mean, it's just
unbelievable.
Presumably they were. I mean, there aren't any spires near this because I know the reason they came to Salisbury was to check out the spire of Salisbury Cathedral. So, but there don't seem to be any, you know, church
when you
spires,
said spires
near this armaments factory.
When you said spires, though, I was going, no, the spies, not spires. Spies, what we call them. So, come and check out the spires. Bye. I see what you're saying.
No, didn't they say, wasn't that their cover story?
120 metres high for Salisbury, yes.
What I love about that cover story is it's so insulting. It's so,
so
insulting.
Cynical and horrible. I mean, you know, one has to laugh, but it is truly, truly awful. I mean, unspeakably awful. Gosh,
horrendous.
It makes me seethe, which is why I shan't be sending it. That's the main reason why I won't be buying the Fabergé egg. Sorry, Mr. Fab. Let us not go a step further, Craig, without talking about this football Super League.
I'm so incensed. Bloody excited. Incensed.
Sorry.
Why?
Excited?
Why am I
incensed? No, I'm incensed. Oh.
Oh, come on. Come on, the Arsenal and the Man U. Come on, the Crystal Palace, are they in it too? I don't know who the hell is joining the league. Who's in the Super League? Martin!
I don't know.
Who's in it?
Yes. Both of the Manchesters. Manchester, so Rovers and Albion. Yes.
Rovers and Albion. Most of the Manchesters.
The Spurs, the Arsenal, that's
the
four.
The Spurs. Come on, the Hotspur, you are in the game.
Come on.
Come on, the Hotspur.
Probably Aston Villa.
You won't take the blame when you lose the cup and you come in the final and you're the Arsenal. Or was it? I can't remember who it was.
Vinyl.
I've forgotten who I support by the end of this chance.
No, I can't.
What was... So who else? So the two
Manchesters,
Rovers and Albion.
Liverpool.
Liverpool,
Spurs, Arsenal.
Oh, that's right.
And there's
Arsenal.
One other there, but it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, you get the idea.
Wolves, Martin, by the way, is short for Wolverhampton. Wolves. They don't call it Wolverhampton.
No.
They call it Wolves. Wolves,
I
don't
remember
be fooled.
That. I'm sure. Yeah, I think one of the sound men we had on that Sounds of the City special we did. I think
he did. He supported the Wolves.
That's right, yes. Yeah. He was a big supporter of the Wolves. I thought,
come on, the Wolves, you are a carnivore. You are pack animal.
We don't see you anymore.
Wanted more of the cup when you came to the final round. You lost because you got fewer goals. You hound.
That's right. They are. Canis lupus. Yes, they are. You see? You've got it.
What does it mean? So we're disappointed about the Super League.
I think we're.
Aren't we?
I think. Oh, it's so.
Everyone's very cross about
it. We're very cross because.
Really cross.
Yes,
sorry.
Because it's a. Oh, all these teams.
It's a betrayal of everything that football stands for.
I don't even know where to begin.
I mean, literally,
I don't know where to begin. I don't know where to begin.
I mean, my local team here in Chingford,
what are they called?
Palace.
Palace.
Crystal Palace.
Win this year. Palace. We'll lift the cup, my dear, because.
And we all will cheer.
And we all will cheer because we are the Palace. We are. Come on, sing with.
Sing with us now.
Alice.
We will rhyme.
And we'll lift the cup and we'll drink beer.
Anyhow,
this year.
Whether we win or not. Palace. You've got to have a good song, haven't you? You've got to have a good song to get behind. But I think a couple of Spanish clubs have joined, but the French haven't joined.
Well, really?
It's just a Super League.
Oh, right. What?
French
haven't joined. Is that why? Or is it because of the virus?
Well, I think it's on principle because it's a betrayal of everything that football stands for.
Oh, I see. The French.
Riddle me this,
that's
Martin.
Good. On
riddle
principle.
Riddle me this. What's everyone so upset about?
I think it's because everybody's worried that the teams don't win places. There's a sort of cabal. You're in. You're basically in the Champions Super League, or whatever it's called, the European Super League.
Oh, and you can never leave.
You can't be relegated.
Out.
So you're just in it. It's going to ride roughshod or drive a coach and four or something like that through the domestic game. But yes, it's gonna be catastrophic for the domestic game. The domestic game.
There's hardly any teams in the Super League, are there? I mean, it's like, does that mean you won't have? I really don't want to get too technical. I know you don't know a lot about football, Martin. I don't get too technical.
No, but ask me because I know an awful lot.
My understanding is that all the footballers in groups.
Yes,
you know, you've got the Premier League. And then you've got the division.
The Championship League. Then you've got First Division, Second Division.
And then you've got the FA Cup.
Yes, which...
And all the teams play each other in the FA.
Then you've got your UEFA thing, isn't there?
The UEFA Cup. Yeah, yeah.
And then the sort of European Cup Winners' Cup or something like that. Is that right? Or is there,
it's the Cup Winners... And there's the European Cup Winners' Cup Winners' Cup Winners' Cup.
Then there's a... I think there's a Milk Cup... And a charity shield, and then there's the milk shield. Then there's also, don't forget the championship, the European Championships as well. The championships, PSV Eindhoven, that's in that language.
Come on,
that's what I'm saying.
Come on,
PSV Eindhoven.
Come on, you Barcelonas. Yes, all that stuff. There's a lot of football, isn't there?
An awful lot of football going on.
How is this going to work?
Well, because I'll tell you how it's going to work. Sky is going to give each... Actually, no, this is even before Sky's come into the operation. Each club that signs up for the European Super League, come on, you Super League, each team that's... That sounded quite convincing. Each team that signs up gets given a cheque for 350 million euros. That's just for the team. That goes to the club. That goes into the AstraKhan lined
pocket. Does it go to the shareholders?
Some of it might even find its way to the players because that'd be nice for them.
Well, that must be the wage bill for about 3 days.
I should think so. Yes. I should think so. Then I mean, they get the Sky deal on top of that, which will probably be, I don't know how many hundreds of millions that'll be. But it's basically, it's just a very clever way of conjuring money up out of thin air.
So is it as cynical as it'll make those teams then just sort of, those will just be sort of exhibition matches? Right? Oh, God, that's another part of football, isn't it? All the exhibition matches.
All the exhibition matches.
Non-league friendlies and all that stuff. I mean, it's just a lot of football.
An awful lot of football.
There's a lot of matches.
But also, where does it leave the national team? Where does it leave the club teams?
Oh, yeah.
All of these people are going to be cast aside by the mammon that is the European Super League. And
well, Marty, this has got me fuming now. I'm absolutely fuming.
Oh, because it's a game for us.
Take your ruddy hands off my football.
It was a game that was for us, the working classes. And it's been wrenched from us by...
It's been wrenched
our calloused, horny hands. It's been turned into some wretched sort of... I'm so cross, I've forgotten what the words are. But yes... It's been turned into a commodity. They've commoditized my working class game, and I bloody don't like
it. Yes, I suppose if I was just to add, a sort of a pinch of seasoning to the to this heady brew, it would be football. Already seems to me to be pretty exploitative. It seems to be pretty much. I mean, didn't they get rid of the sort of four divisions? You know, 20 years ago to create this Premier League.
Yes.
Didn't they already do this 20 years ago?
And they're now doing it again. Only this time, it's not a meritocracy. It is a cabal, essentially. It's, these teams are in it for good.
Well, I mean, what can we do, Martin, as rank and file
football? We have to go back to our clubs, Craig, and
muster back to the club,
wrap ourselves, as I most certainly will, in our club colours, in our flags.
Wrap myself in my
club
blanket. Back to the crystal, we are going to chant.
Yes.
We're going to make this ridiculous can't, as in the old-fashioned word of can't.
Yes, I see. Not that word. No, the not that. Yes.
I wanted to say can't.
Yes.
But I had to make it rhyme with chant.
We're like,
we are going to defeat the Super League.
We are the Aston team. We are the Aston. And we're going to overthrow the people who play us.
Do you know what that is, Mart? I'll tell you what that is. That is pretty much all we've got time for,
no,
I'm afraid.
Good heavens above.
Yeah, it's quite rousing.
Oh,
I feel my blood's up now.
Same here.
You know, I got very, very cross.
Very.
It's an injustice.
Yes, you're absolutely
It's made my blood boil. Ooh. I am furious. I'm so cross.
Yes.
I'm going to go and... I'm going to go and think about watching some football and then not bother.
I'm not even going to bother thinking about it, but I will be thinking about the conversation, though, certainly, as I wrap myself in my footballing scarf, weeping into my bovril. Yes.
Buying myself a really disgusting burger for £5.
Oh, yes.
And standing on a freezing cold concrete step, watching someone in the middle distance... heft some soggy bit of leather around.
Yes.
What looks like a very, very cold, wet field.
That's exactly what we're going to do.
Well, anyway, Martin, I better fire this thing up again.
I'm not going to go on this back on the space hopper because I think I've had it with that. Instead, Elon Musk has designed a special human lander for me that I'm going to.
Oh, that's
I'm going to
nice.
Hop into that and see if that's ready to whisk me off.
Oh, that's clever. Like Ingenuity. Yes, that's right. The rover. Well, I've got this. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm going to get back in my dirigible. I've got this. My dirigible is actually solar powered, so that's why I'm putting this hat on.
That's clever.
Which has got these solar panels on. Yeah. So you see, that's quite. I mean, it's unfortunate you still have to wear this.
What's good about
that
your solar paneled dirigible is it's.
Yeah.
It's been designed by someone who's really put some thought into it, and really it's not just literally something someone's done on the back. You know, they could have gone for a design that was you know, it was just rubbish. And no one had really thought through and make a real virtue. I tell you what, we're going to give... Well, no, I think it's really important that this dirigible's designed by someone who has no idea, hasn't put any thought into it at all, hasn't used any local vernacular, or spoken to a local, rather comely local artist.
Fair enough. Yes. But before you decommission it and you get it... You're going to get it chipped up into rubble.
Yes.
Just please sit on top of that finger and take a photo for me. Please.
Oh, I will.
Anyway, till next time,
till next
Martin.
Time. D'ahoy!
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 Back to the crystal, we are going to chart. We're going to make this ridiculous. Can't. We are going to defeat the Super League because we are Aston Crystals.
You've been listening to Time Ghost. Time Ghost was created by Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller. It was produced by Andy Goddard and Diggory Waite, and the exec producer was Claire Broughton. Time Ghost is a Hattrick podcast.